Hey, what's going on, everyone? Thanks for tuning back to the Davidson Hang podcast, our YouTube channel, Audible, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you're finding us. Excited to bring to you Rob Sandoval from the Sandoval Design Studio. We were connected to Josh, so shout out to Josh and him introducing me to the whole family. I appreciate you, brother. Excited to have you on here.
Thanks. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And, you know, we were just catching up earlier and you just got your real estate license as well. Like, it sounds like you're multifaceted and you clearly have an eye for design and you're just doing a lot of cool things. So really excited to dig deeper into that.
Yeah, it's interesting. So we were talking about the company. I have a architecture/interior design company. And because of the pandemic, I'm sure a lot of companies right now are slowly trying to adapt to how things are changing. And my thought was, because architecture and interiors kind of are through real estate, why not get my own license? So that way it's a kind of a smooth transaction between selling people their homes and then being like, hey, do you guys want to do an extension and expansion or even interior design? So it kind of goes hand in hand. And that was the one thing that I'm trying to do to adapt for my company, is to just grow it in a sense that it's kind of like a turnkey where people go in there and then have all these different types of things that go hand in hand.
Yeah. It's like a one-stop shop, right? It's like that's really cool.
And the real estate process in Pennsylvania was interesting. I did the expedited one, which typically I think it takes around like 4 to 6 months. I did like the 3 week process where it was like thick, but it was so thick. and I had to study and then I took the test, and apparently there's like a 50% chance, but I did it on the first try. So in like a month I was able to do it. And I think a lot of people can do it. If you have the time, definitely do it. Cause people are always going to need houses, right? Mm. You're never going to be out of stock with those types of stuff. So
yeah, I mean, we just bought our place on Christmas Eve, so it's been like half a year now, and yeah, it's cool. Like, I never thought of myself who's like into all this stuff, and my wife's like definitely more into like the interior design and stuff, but she loves it. Like, her, like when we buy something new from Crate and Barrel or anything like that, like she spends all day looking online, like, oh, what colors, like what. She's like all thoughtful. I'm like the opposite. I mean, you can see my office is a mess, right? But
there's always one in every relationship, because my husband, like every single time he's like, what do you think of this? Or what do you think about that? And I'm like, no. And there's also one person that always makes the decision.
Yeah.
It's like, it's that aesthetic that you'll see in the house. So, and some people I find really have no problems living anywhere, and other people are very adamant about how they want their space. And so I'm a firm believer that space is very personal, and a lot of the times people, you know, they have there's a certain power with interiors, in that it really does pull a sense of emotion from you, whether or not it's where you come home and you feel calm from a busy work day, or you go into a room, like maybe it's your office and the colors and the furniture, and it makes you kind of think, and it provokes like thoughts and a good like work environment. You know, there's a lot of different things that I think a lot of people in the industry know that your normal average person doesn't even think of. And it comes down to like colors and textures, and even furniture could really like help ease people into like feeling comfortable. So it's a really interesting profession.
Yeah. I was one of those guys who like didn't put too much thought into it, but my wife like really carefully curated our living room, where it is very inviting. And every time people come over, they're like, wow, this is very comfortable. You know, everyone says the same thing. They're like, it's very comfortable. And, yeah, I never really put too much thought into it, because I was living in Manhattan, which, you know, was a small studio, right? But even that, like, she thought like about everything. And I always took it for granted. But then I started going to other people's houses, I'm like, oh, actually, like, she definitely did put a lot of thought into this compared to like most people, you know. So, it's fascinating. I feel like I'm learning something new. Like, I feel like I'm such a homebody now, whereas before I was in the city all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's what the pandemic's going to do, right? I feel like everybody now has that interest in sprucing up their house because it's where they're at all the time. Last year during the pandemic, there was a huge spike in the amount of people purchasing home furniture, especially home office furniture, because a lot of people were spending a lot more time at home, working from home. So they wanted a space that really was conducive to working. And so you saw a lot of companies like Crate and Barrel and Pottery Barn, West Elm. A lot of those people really did have to change the way that they were doing their order because people were just ordering online and picking it up. But there was a huge, huge spike with the amount of furniture that they were selling. And even to the point where a lot of the companies couldn't even couldn't take the amount of ordering because there were only so much stock and remember the time people weren't producing anything as well. So, you know, it's insane. And it's actually continued now. People, I think, have a different mindset in their environment and where they live. I don't know if you like go to an office or, I mean, it looks like you work in your home, but, you know, some people now have completely like transformed their homes to be their offices. Yeah. So, you know, it's really interesting.
Yeah. I was one of those dudes who like was always in the office, and I was very lucky that LinkedIn like hires a lot of interior designers to like the office was very carefully like curated because we were in the Empire State Building.
Okay. So,
So it was really cool. And then I never really appreciated offices until I worked at LinkedIn. I was like, wow, like even the design of meeting, like coffee, water cooler chats, like everything was designed so that you run into people, right? So there were a lot of social spaces. So it was just cool because it was designed for people, you would meet more people every day. And I was like, huh, like there was a lot of thought that they put into all that.
Yeah. It's not all pretty colors and textures and like materials and stuff. You know, I think that that's like a misconception when people think of like interior design, especially when it comes to commercial interiors, because it's all about how people interact in the space. And just like you were mentioning, you know, when anybody goes into like a cooler area where they're getting water, they try to make it more of a social experience. And so people do stand there and talk. And feel comfortable in that space. Maybe there's like some seating spaces there where you could kind of sit down and just take a break. But yeah, everything is pretty much curated to make sure that it's an experience and not just a pretty picture. Because people at the end of the day have to interact in spaces.
Yeah. So it sounds like you do both commercial and residential for both.
Yeah, I do a lot of commercial for hospital. There was a hospital close to New York. It was Valley Hospital. Actually in Jersey. And they were all about experience as well as when it comes down to like hospital interiors, it gets tricky because there are certain materials that you have to use just because they have to be cleaned on a daily basis and cleaned with like cleaners that are very strong. And so you have to use certain materials, and they also have this like curtain that they dip in silver technology. I mean, it's a different animal in itself, but yeah, I did a lot of commercial, hospitality, you know, residential as well. So I always like residential a little bit more because it's more private and personal. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's interesting. And then is it like, I'm sure every project's different, but is it by project or by hour? Like, how does it go for typically, like, because I think people probably think, oh, can I afford an interior designer? Or do you think, is it catered more for like the upper class? I mean, I kind of just asked you like a lot of questions.
But. No, that's a great question. I think a lot of people are reluctant right now with computers, let's just say the internet. I know it's old school, but you know, especially stuff like Pinterest. They've really sort of changed the way that people look at spaces. And nowadays people could research and see what spaces they like. And so I feel like interior design itself is dying in a sense that, you know, most people don't really want to hire interior designers because they don't want to pay, even though a lot of people don't really know how how much they're paying for interior designers. And also a lot of like Crate and Barrel, Pottery Barn always have free design services. And so with all those advents, it's like interior design has kind of been pushed to the side. And now people think it's a lot more expensive to hire an interior designer because they think that since services are free for like these companies, or you could just go online and do it, that the people who do hire them have the money to do it. But, you know, to answer your question, it really depends on the scope of the project. You could have a room where you could hire an interior designer and they could charge you hourly and they would give you a flat rate fee. Maybe that they could say it's going to take, what, 4 hours of their time, and they'll charge like, I don't know, like $50 an hour for a space. I mean, it really depends who you're hiring and where you're going.
Oh, that's not bad. I was thinking it would be like thousands, even just for like a four hour project.
No, it's typically not that bad. I'd say for, you know, for high-end designers, like really high-end designers that do the probably like hotels or commercial spaces in New York City, they probably will charge something astronomical like that. But for your average interior designer, it's probably around, like, I'd say in the city, you're looking at probably around like 50 to 75 an hour. And then depending on how long they take to design your space, it could kind of, you know, be around that hourly rate.
Oh, I mean, yeah, that's not bad at all. I think most people, like you said, think it's much more.
So, yeah.
Huh.
And then I would always check and ask for a quote beforehand, because, you know, it's like, you don't want to go there and expect to pay like 200 and end up being like $2,000. You know, but, you know,
yeah, that's cool. And then and then architectural. So did you get the interior design certification? I know there's a certification process as well, right?
I actually didn't get my interior design certification. So I started off architecture, and I worked for a couple of firms. The first firm that I worked for was Perkins Eastman, and that was in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And then after that, I ended up moving to the Lehigh Valley, which is like an hour and a half away from the city. And then I worked for a firm here that did a lot of commercial. We did like the Sands Casino at that time.
Yeah.
And that was a fun project, and a lot of restaurants as well. But I also knew that ever since I was done with Perkins Eastman that I wanted to spend a lot more time doing more interior than architecture, because I feel like there's the notion that architecture is the spaces inside actually is a farce, because architecture and interior go hand in hand. And what I found when I started really working in the industry is that architects tend to just do the exterior of the building, and then you would give it to another group that would do the interior of the building. And when I went to school at Pratt, it was very much like, let's look at a space in the city and see what you guys could come up with. So it was more or less for me, like, I went to school for architecture, but I really was more interested in interior design. Because I feel like the spaces in the city, you can't really build a lot in the city at this point. I mean, you can, but you would have to tear stuff down. And so architects, I guess, sort of replace interior designs, and they would just do the fit outs for the buildings. So like the interiors of the buildings. So with my experience of interiors, I just decided to kind of just put interior in my company, even though I don't have the, I think it's called the NDICQ, which shows that you are a licensed interior design. I know there's a lot of places that don't really require that you be a licensed interior designer. It's great to have at the end of your name, but it's not a, you know, a requirement. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think I'm definitely like, I'm more fascinated by the interior, and then, but yeah, I think living in Manhattan, like, or, you know, it's interesting, right? It's like, I think not a lot of us think too much about, but I think everything, there's so many people that work on a lot of things that we take for granted. You know, and then Yeah, I think New York City, I think the thing I really appreciate about architects and interior designers is like, you guys are all really passionate about what you do for a living. I don't think that's the case for most people. I think most people hate their job, but it seems like you actually enjoy really? What you do. Yeah, I think so.
It's, well, I feel like it's definitely a passion of mine. You know, as a kid, I feel like a lot of people gravitate towards certain things, right? Something that they have fun with and something that they do. Don't get me wrong, architecture is definitely a passion for me, and so is interior. But after you do it on a daily basis and you do the same thing over and over and over, you know, it tends to become a job. But it is it's one of those things that I do enjoy, and I am very blessed to be able to do it. But at an early age, I knew that I loved spaces, and I remember my parents would come home and they'd be, you know, they'd be surprised because things in the house had been moved, and I would like put things together. And even before I knew what that was, it was, you know, like interior design and / architecture for me. But that's just what I naturally gravitated towards. Just like, you know, I'm sure you have, you know, some sort of thing that when you were a young kid that you just naturally did and you had fun doing it. And it was, you know, something that you thought that you could carry on into your adulthood because it was just something that you enjoyed doing. And then it sets in as an adult, you know, then if you do it and then they're forcing you to do it and then you have to get a certain amount done, then it becomes a job and it becomes, you know, but it's still fun. I'm sure you enjoy what you do.
Yeah, no, I do. I enjoy what I do, but I would say most people, I think, don't necessarily enjoy what they do. But you bring up a good point, though. I think anytime we get paid to do something, it almost loses the fun. Whereas, like, when it's more like we're just doing it for fun, people tend to enjoy that a lot more. It's weird. It's like once you get paid, it's like, oh, I'm selling out.
It's so true. Yeah, I. But you know, to your point, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say that there are a lot of people out there who maybe don't enjoy it as much. I tend to kind of meet people who like what they do. You know, sometimes it does become a chore because it is very repetitive, but I don't know. You could take anything that you really enjoy. Let's just say, you know, you really enjoy like a cheeseburger. And then if that's all you ate 7 days a week,
it's true.
They'll be sick of it, right?
Yeah.
I feel like it's the same thing with certain jobs. You know, you enjoy it. And then, yeah, you'll find the great things about it. But once you do it every day, it kind of becomes lackluster. You know, after a while, it's just like, it kind of doesn't become exciting anymore. So, but that's why you have to kind of just switch things up. And it's up to you kind of to take the reins and just make it more exciting and do stuff that just pushes the boundaries. And you know, that's just life in general, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Have you ever watched a Netflix show called Design?
I have not, no.
It's so good. It's so good. There's this like, I think they're like a Swedish architectural firm.
Okay.
Where, like, there's people that are really innovating and doing all these like really cool buildings and all these like really unique things. There's one where there's like a home where it's also like a ski area as well. So they designed it so it's like a mountain. I think it's called the mountain, where it's like every floor, it's like green. And then, you know, there's like every level, there's like, it's like layered, like, I don't know. So it's cool for me. Like when I see stuff like that, I'm like, whoa, like that's so cool. Like very innovative.
Well, that's one thing that I do like, I love about architecture. Is the fact that it is a forward-thinking type of profession where I think as an architect and as a artist and as a designer, because I could clump that all together, we tend to have a vision of something, you know, whether or not it's like a building or a piece of art or an installation or an interior. And it's a vision we have in our head. And our work really is to try to make and imitate what we see in our head and put it out for people to actually walk through. That is the final product. And whether or not it's, you know, like any of those artists or designers, anybody that does something just like you were talking about that takes it to a different level, I'm always in such awe when people have that, because it's incredible. Like, it's something that nobody's ever seen before. Like, how do you even think of making a building into a slope or a ski slope? I mean, it's like mind blowing, right?
Yeah.
So stuff like that, you know, it's a rarity for people to get those types of projects.
Yeah.
But when you see it, it's always like, what an amazing feat. Like, how did these people come up with these things? So yeah, it's a great profession in that sense. Yeah.
It was so funny. I'm reading a book by Anthony Bourdain, and he was making fun of how ugly Toronto is. Like, he's like, it's just an ugly city. And I was dying.
Oh my God.
Right? Like, do you agree? Like, Toronto is not the most aesthetically, like, pleasing city.
Well, I have been to, I haven't been to Toronto.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I've never been to Toronto. I have been in certain places where, and like what we were talking about, I think a lot of people really don't understand why some places where they go to, like maybe Toronto, it doesn't have a certain excitement, or you go to certain cities or certain locations and you're like, ooh, this place is like really bad. Like, I don't want to get out, or this doesn't look fun. Like, let's just keep on going. It's because of the architecture or the things you're using there. Like, it really does make a difference.
Yeah.
It does make a difference in how people feel when they go there. So I can't speak of Toronto because I haven't been there, but if the architecture is bad and the layout is bad, then yes, I could see how you would make a statement like that. I've been in places in Pennsylvania, because that's currently where I am right now, where I'm like, yeah, this place looks like nothing's been happening here since, like, you know, like the 1990s. And nobody cares about how things look. And so you're not going to get anybody visiting these areas, unfortunately. So,
yeah. And then on the other end of the spectrum, like Rainbow Row in Charleston is like where I proposed to my wife, because I know she really cares about the aesthetics, and like to her, like that elicits emotions, and, you know, like it makes her excited and like passionate and stuff, right? So I intentionally chose that because I knew that she would like, and she would feel the energy from like being in a very vibrant neighborhood, you know?
Yep. So. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I've never been there. How is it? What does it look like?
It's pretty cool. It's like very pretty, like very aesthetic. Like that town, like they do a really good job. And you know, like it's historical, right? So they definitely make sure like no one's gonna make any changes, right? There's like, you know, they make sure that it's gonna stay that way to preserve like the heritage and the history.
Okay.
You know.
That's cool. Well, it's funny because I was this past weekend, actually, I just came back yesterday. I went over to Vegas. I was there for the weekend, and it's I mean, you've been to Vegas, I'm sure, right?
Oh, it's beautiful. I love Vegas. Yeah.
Yeah. Vegas is exciting. I mean, and if you look really at the spaces that they create, one fun thing that a lot of people don't know is that when you go to Vegas and you look inside at their interiors, they don't have watches or clocks on the wall. And they do that intentionally they want you to stay there for as long as you can. And so the, like, everything is all flashy. Everything is all lit. I mean, it's like, it's such a stunning place to go, but that's the reason why I think people are attracted there. You know, it's like everywhere you look at, for me, it's like eye candy. It's like, I can't stop
looking
at how they like their chandeliers, their light fixtures, their flooring, their carpeting. I mean, everything is amazing. So, and I was just like looking everywhere, and everyone's like, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm like, yeah. I'm trying to take everything in because it's so stunning. Like, and it's every time I go there, there's always something new.
Yeah. I mean, I lived in New York City, and I still feel the same way about New York City. Like, there's just, there's so much like design, like there's so much new stuff, right? Like new buildings, like, there's always something going on, right? So I feel like, Vegas is beautiful. Like it's truly, man, like you said, like everyone loves Vegas. Like I think they get the most visitors out of like anywhere. I think they're like definitely one of the top world's destinations.
Oh, I could say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting.
But if you wanted something flashy, I mean, that's that's the place to go. You know, you get like lots of pictures, like Instagram worthy backdrops there.
Yeah, Instagram has like really taken off, right? Like I think Instagram has like taken design to like the next level, and where anyone feel like they can be creative, right?
Yeah. Instagram definitely has TikTok now is the new thing. I don't necessarily go there because I know it's highly addictive. My husband loves it. I mean, he'll sit down and the next thing you know, it's like 3 hours of gone, and he's just, you know, like pushing up and like watching the next video. It's captivating. I mean, like I said, the advent of the internet and all these social media has really changed the way that people perceive a lot of things, interior and architecture as well. And it makes it so much more accessible to anybody nowadays. Yeah. To be inspired by spaces or inspired by something and then to implement it. Because with Instagram, I've also seen other things where people could put like a tag on something. You could just click on it and then it would take you right to the site where you could purchase an item. Mm. So, you know, that certainly is like a new way for people to make a space that they see on their phone come alive in their own house. So, yeah.
Have you noticed any like interior like trends? Like I think plants has become a real big thing this year.
I think this year it's a lot of like natural. People are really trying to go natural. There was like a shift, I'd say a couple years ago, mid-century modern was in. They're doing a lot of that. And I feel like nowadays a lot of like natural materials are coming in. I've seen a lot of people putting jute rugs in their homes. A lot of like outdoor types of furniture, like rattan and caning, that sort of stuff. It's like it's almost like I think we've lived inside spaces for so long and have put, I don't want to say synthetic, but like a lot of like furniture that is so opposite of nature. And now that we've stayed inside because of the pandemic, people want to go outside and embrace bringing the outside inside. And so I see a trend of like natural, like products going back inside. Huh. That's what I've been seeing, which I find really interesting.
Yeah. Do you think as a society, we just want like the yin and yang, where like we go too far off one thing, we just completely do the opposite?
Yeah, the pendulum never stays on one side. It always kind of goes left and right. Just like now, I was having a conversation with somebody about Gen Z? Yeah. I think it is, right? And how I think they started taking on the fashion of the 70s. I think that's making a comeback now.
Yeah.
With the bell bottom. I don't know if it's bell bottoms, but I know it's the high waist jeans.
Yeah.
You know, there is a flow. If you really look at stuff, how trends come and go, it's the same thing with interiors and with art, maybe not so much architecture, but definitely interiors. There is a swing and there is a cycle. And like what we've seen with natural stuff they've done before, and it's going to keep on doing it that way. I think people like the change. Definitely companies like Crate and Barrel and Pottery Barn, West Elm help with that because of course it's a business and they need to sell stuff. But yeah, I really do feel like people constantly want to change because they want their environment to change as well, right? We all kind of want something new and different. And so, you know, that's just how we are. It's a human nature thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I think the world is interesting where I think we just like change. Like a lot of us like change, right? We don't want to be too stagnant in anything, right? So whether it's a new wardrobe or new style, new haircut, like we want variety. I think that's one of the most interesting things about life, right?
Right. Yeah. Yep, I agree.
Well, on a completely different topic, I'm curious, you know, your thoughts on like, do you think in Asian society, I know you're Filipino, right? Are we becoming more accepting of the LGBTQ community?
That's a great question. So I was actually born in the Philippines. until I was 9, and then, you know, we moved here. I haven't really gone back in a long time. I'd say the last time I was back was a good, at least 7 years ago. You could tell that we as a society here in the United States have gone through a lot in the last, I'd say even last year, you know, with the Black Lives Matter, with the pandemic. I think there's a lot of shift in people's thinking. And I'd even say with the way that TikTok has really kind of put new different people, you know, whether or not there are different ethnicities, different colors, different kind of thoughts. Even with the LGBTQ nowadays, you know, it's like, it's easy to just go to any social media and see that there are people out there that are different. And so to answer your question, whether or not in the Philippines it's changing, I don't know. I think we have a lot more here in the United States to be thankful for LGBT rights in terms of people really fighting for equality for us in the Philippines, because it is very, it's a lot of it is rooted, and this is my personal belief, you know, in Filipinos tend to be very religious and very traditional. Maybe it's not as forward as it is here. I'm sure they've had strides, but I don't know how it is to be LGBT person in the Philippines. And here nowadays, it's we're still not there, but it's not as bad as it was, I'd say, 20 years ago. And so I'm hoping that it's good in the Philippines. I'm sorry.